I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Those bragging about overturning Roe v. Wade have no clue about the power of women. But they found out when reproductive freedom was on the ballot. We won in 2022 and 2020, and we'll win again in 2024.
President Biden delivers his State of the Union. We'll play excerpts, and on this International Women's Day, get response from The Nation publisher Katrina Vandenhoevel, Israeli peace activist Netta Haman Mina, whose mother was a hostage in Gaza, and Palestinian Egyptian American University of Chicago professor Iman Abdelhadi, who gave an alternate SOTU last night called The State of Genocide.
Tonight's State of the Union is the State of the Genocide because our leaders have followed a familiar playbook. Investing in power, money, and blood at the expense of humanity.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden delivered the State of the Union Thursday night as he faces the likely prospect of an election rematch with Donald Trump in November, and amidst mounting public anger over his enabling of Israel's assault on Gaza. Biden announced plans to tax the wealthy, vowed to restore federal abortion rights, and touted his record on relaxing federal marijuana restrictions and punishments. But he also doubled down on his efforts to pass a hardline border and immigration crackdown and repeated far-right Congressmember Marjorie Taylor Greene's use of the term illegal after she heckled him during the speech over the death of a Georgia woman who allegedly was killed by an undocumented immigrant. Biden held up a pin handed to him by Taylor Greene with the killed woman's name on it. He also addressed his age and welcomed Sweden as the newest member of NATO, following its formal entry into the military alliance earlier in the day. Swedish Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson sat next to Jill Biden as one of her guests. President Biden also announced plans for a new port to deliver humanitarian aid to Gaza.
Tonight, I'm directing the U.S. military to lead an emergency mission to establish a temporary pier in the Mediterranean on the coast of Gaza that can receive large shipments carrying food, water, medicine, and temporary shelters.
As they watched progressive lawmakers Cori Bush, Summer Lee, Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib, the only Palestinian American in Congress, held up signs reading "Lasting Ceasefire Now" and "Stop Sending Bombs." Tlaib, Summer, and Bush also donned Palestinian keffiyehs. Separately, many Democratic women wore white in honor of the suffragettes. Today is International Women's Day. We'll have more on the State of the Union after headlines. Ahead of last night's State of the Union, hundreds of protesters blockaded roads outside the White House and near the Capitol, delaying President Biden's speech. This is Ahmad Abuzneid with the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, speaking from one of the shutdown streets.
President Biden's talking about building a port to get aid into Gaza, but the simple formula is stop funding the occupation and the genocide, and Palestinians will build our own damn port.
Activists also delivered their own People's State of the Union Thursday night. This is Samaya Awad of the Adala Justice Project.
We're out here representing the majority of Americans who have made it clear time and again in the last 5 months that they demand a ceasefire now. That they demand no more weapons to Israel. The majority of the people in this country want taxpayer dollars invested in life, not in genocide, not in war.
Protests took place elsewhere across the country, including in Chicago, where a coalition of activists held a State of the Union, address called State of Genocide. Participants observed a 24-hour vigil in Federal Plaza, reading aloud the names of over 30,000 Palestinians killed by Israel in the last 5 months. One of the participants in the State of the Genocide event will be joining us today after headlines. In Gaza, the health ministry says Israeli attacks have killed at least 78 people and wounded more than 100 others over the past day. In the southern city of Rafah, at least 5 people were killed in an Israeli airstrike. As they deplored the destruction, people at the scene blasted President Biden's plans for an aid port.
Instead of telling us they will build a port to help us, stop providing the weapons they throw at us. All these American weapons are killing our kids and killing us wherever we go. We don't need aid from them. We need them to stop the killing, stop the death. Wherever we go, we find death.
UN experts are calling for a probe into reports of sexual assault, torture, and killing of Palestinian women prisoners by Israeli forces. The Palestinian Prisoner Society says an estimated 240 Palestinian women have been detained since October 7th. Some of the released women have since spoken out on their traumatic experiences. This is Hadil Al-Dadou, who was rounded up and arrested with a group of men in Gaza in December.
They put me and the young men in a hole in the ground. The young men were sitting opposite me. One of the soldiers took off my hijab. I started to cry. I was afraid. I asked him if I could have it back. He started to laugh at me and refused to put my hijab back on. In that instance, I was afraid and anxious. My husband was beaten. A soldier fired twice in the air and told me, "I killed your husband." The tank started to throw sand towards me and the men. I was trying to get away while I was handcuffed, but the tank kept getting closer to us. I started crying, asking the soldiers what will he do to us. He said, "I want to bury you alive in this hole and let the dogs eat you."
In the occupied West Bank, Israel's moving ahead with plans to create another 3,400 housing units in illegal settlements, despite condemnation from the United States and other allies. The settlements are a violation of international law. The Wall Street Journal recently published a video showing the surge in illegal settlement building, with new roads and outposts mushrooming in the West Bank since October 7th. Palestinian officials have pushed back on the illegal construction, but the vast majority of it has gone unreported or unpunished by the Israeli government. In Nigeria, at least 275 students are missing after dozens of gunmen attacked their school in the northwestern town of Kuriga Thursday, kidnapping children between the ages of 8 and 15. No group has claimed responsibility. This is the second mass abduction in Nigeria in less than a week.
How can these gunmen come and carry our children? This is the reason why I am so sad. This is our village, Kuriga. Please, Your Excellency, help us.
A search and rescue team has been deployed. Abductions of students have become more frequent in recent years, where armed groups target local residents for large ransoms. Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso are launching a joint security force to combat rising extremist violence. The three nations had already formed a security alliance after severing military ties with their former colonizer, France, since military juntas took over following a series of recent coups in the Sahel region. This comes days after a public prosecutor in Burkina Faso said at least 170 people were executed in 3 separate attacks in the northern Yatenga province. Violence carried out by militants linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State has been on the rise, forcing millions in Burkina Faso to flee their homes. In Senegal, President Macky Sall announced a new presidential election date, March 24th. Tensions have been mounting in Senegal since President Sall postponed the election last month, triggering mass protests, mass arrests, and accusations by opposition politicians that Sall was orchestrating a constitutional coup. President Sall's term ends April 2nd. Haiti's government has extended a state of emergency until April. UN officials warn Haiti's health system is nearing collapse due to shortages of staff, equipment, and other resources to treat a growing number of wounded patients as gang unrest continues, demanding the resignation of unelected Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry. Many have also denounced police violence against local residents.
This situation in the country is critical. People can no longer go about their business. Our children can no longer go to school. Merchants can't go to the market. No one can move around the country. Recently, a tear gas grenade thrown by the police hit a journalist in the eye. The police kill students and they kill activists. Today, they're questioning activists. We have a prime minister. We don't know whether he's dead or alive because he's lost in the wild.
Ariel Henry has still not returned to Haiti. He is reportedly in Puerto Rico after coming back from Kenya. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi traveled to the disputed Kashmir region Thursday, his first visit since stripping the Muslim-majority region of its semi-autonomous status in 2019. The decision was hailed by Hindu nationalists. Modi addressed a crowd in Kashmir's largest city, Srinagar.
There's no Article 370 today, and that is why the talent of the youth of Jammu and Kashmir is being recognized and respected. They are getting new opportunities. Today, there are equal rights and opportunities for everyone here.
Rights groups have denounced Modi's intensifying crackdown on journalists and dissidents in Jammu and Kashmir. In Hong Kong, lawmakers published a draft of a new national security law that further cracks down on dissent and free speech. The law expands the definition of certain offenses and targets treason, insurrection, sabotage, external interference, theft of state secrets, and espionage. The draft law also imposes harsher penalties for these offenses, including life imprisonment in some cases. The bill is expected to pass swiftly, as only Beijing-aligned lawmakers have been permitted to run in Hong Kong elections since 2021. Back in the United States, a federal appeals court has dismissed a child labor case which sought to hold big tech accountable for the abuse of children forced to work in cobalt mines in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Companies including Apple, Microsoft, Tesla, and Google rely on cobalt to make the rechargeable lithium batteries used in their products, but have argued they merely have a buyer-seller relationship with cobalt suppliers and have no power to stop child labor. The two companies named in the lawsuit are UK-based Glencore and Chinese company Zhejiang Huayu Cobalt. Circuit Judge Naomi Rao acknowledged that tech giants are aware of the child exploitation, that they, quote, intentionally use a murky supply chain to obscure the extent to which they rely on forced labor, unquote. The group International Right Advocates, which brought the lawsuit, says it's considering an appeal. In labor news, Google's come under fire after laying off dozens of unionized contract workers in a likely act of retaliation. The workers were made aware of their firing as they spoke last week in front of the Austin City Council in Texas, which was preparing to vote on a resolution in support of their efforts to negotiate with Google.
There are less than 50 of us at YouTube Music, and we're take two of the largest corporations in the world. So to be supported by the city of Austin and also our allies in the labor community, give us the motivation to keep this fight going.
Not to interrupt, but they just laid us all off.
Oh.
Yeah, they just laid us all off.
We just all, I guess we just all
our
got
our jobs are ended today, effective immediately.
Wow.
I'm sorry your time's expired.
The workers who oversee the YouTube Music platform voted to join the Alphabet Workers Union last year. Since then, Google's refused to bargain with the workers because they're subcontracted through another company. This despite the National Labor Relations Board ruling Google is a co-employer and must bargain with the group. Google claims the unionized workers were let go because their contract had ended, even though it was routinely renewed, and Google has a track record of firing workers during labor organizing efforts. An autopsy report reveals tissue samples from the brain of an Army reservist who killed 18 people during a mass shooting at a main bowling alley in Lewiston last October showed signs of traumatic brain injury. Robert Card was found dead of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound 2 days later. The 40-year-old worked at an Army hand grenade training range and is thought to have been exposed to thousands of low-level blasts. The findings came as a commission investigating the mass shooting is hearing testimony from several of Card's former Army colleagues. Leading up to the shooting, Maine police had been alerted the gunman was a possible danger after he threatened to shoot up his military base. In election news, President Biden won Wednesday's low turnout primary in Hawaii. Uncommitted received its highest percentage of votes yet, though, with roughly 29% of Democratic ballots. The Food and Drug Administration has issued an advisory for 6 brands of ground cinnamon due to lead contamination. The brands are La Fiesta, Markham, MK, Swad, Supreme Tradition, and El Chilar. The FDA said the lead levels in these products are much lower than those found in cinnamon applesauce pouches that were recalled last fall. Long-term lead exposure can pose significant health risks, especially for children. It's been linked to slower development, brain and nervous system damage, behavioral and learning problems, and hearing and speech problems. And today marks International Women's Day. Rallies and other actions are planned across the globe, but in a makeshift camp in southern Gaza's Rafah city, displaced Palestinian women say they're not celebrating this year as they struggle to survive amidst war, hunger, illness, and grief. These are some of their voices.
Women's Day is outside of Palestine. In Palestine, we do not have Women's Day, especially in Gaza. Women have been wiped away. They no longer have an identity here. Before October 7th, women here had a good quality of life in their homes. They were secure and happy. They had everything. After October 7th, they are no longer any women. Women cannot hold on into their children. The houses have been bombed. This is a war of extermination. This is not just a war. These are people. They have all been destroyed. Every generation is killed. Every generation grows up and is then killed. Are they not humans? You bring up your child with your heart, and within moments, within minutes, he is gone, and the house he is in is gone.
We suffer from violence, from sadness, from injustice, from humiliation, from the hardest forms of torture at the hands of the occupation. My wish on International Women's Day is for this war not to get repeated.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, President Biden delivers a State of the Union. We'll play excerpts. And on this International Women's Day, we'll get response from Nation publisher Katrina VandenHeuvel, Israeli peace activist Netta Haman Mina, whose mother was a hostage in Gaza, and Palestinian-Egyptian-American University of Chicago professor Iman Abdelhadi, who gave a State of the Genocide address yesterday. Back in a minute.
تسعين ستين تسعين مية وخمسة وسبعين على خمسين تسعين صدر ستين خصر تسعين فخاد مية وخمسة وسبعين طول على خمسين وزن هدول مقاييس جسدك لازم يسموها جسدكهم الكاف تعود إليك وجسدك يعود إلهم روح حرة داخل جسد غير حر أخذ لي وقت أفهم جسدي جسدي الأنثوي جسدك بيروح بينام بغيب بغلط بتوب من سامح وبرجع بعيد للأبد ماشي مع ورقة تصريح من الطبيب جسدي بكفي غلطة واحدة انزلاق واحد صورة واحدة فيديو واحد كم من عين في على جسدي كم من وجه في لجسدي جسدي أنثوي جسدي عربي جسدي العربي الأنثوي كم ضمير في لجسدي في أنا وفي أنت في إحنا وفي همي هم ضد إحنا وأنت ضد أنا الكل ضد أنا وأنا ضد الكل حتى بالنضال عندي أضعاف من مسؤوليتكم
Just إذا home, أنت your body of theirs by the Palestinian rap group Dam. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden delivered his State of the Union address Thursday night, making his case for a second term ahead of this year's presidential election. Speaking before a joint session of Congress and guests, Biden criticized Republican frontrunner Donald Trump without saying his name and strove to highlight policy differences with the former president and Republicans on a number of issues, including taxes, immigration, reproductive rights, and foreign policy. Biden addressed Gaza, which has become a key election issue, with voters in primary states casting their ballots for uncommitted to express their opposition to Biden's support for Israel's five-month assault on Gaza. Ahead of the speech, hundreds of protesters blockaded roads outside the White House and near the Capitol, delaying Biden's address. In his speech, Biden said the United States would build a temporary seaport off Gaza to assist with the delivery of humanitarian aid. As they watched, progressive lawmakers Cori Bush, Summer Lee, Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib, the only Palestinian American in Congress, held up signs reading "Lasting Ceasefire Now" and "Stop Sending Bombs." Tlaib, Summer, and Bush also donned Palestinian keffiyehs. Separately, many Democratic women wore white in honor of the suffragettes. Today is International Women's Day. But Biden began his State of the Union address on another foreign policy issue, the war in Ukraine. He made a renewed appeal for the House to pass additional funds for Ukraine in response to Russia's invasion. These are some of the president's opening remarks.
Not since President Lincoln and the Civil War have freedom and democracy been under assault at home as they are today. What makes our moment rare is that freedom and democracy are under attack at both at home and overseas at the very same time. Overseas, Putin of Russia is on the march, invading Ukraine and sowing chaos throughout Europe and beyond. If anybody in this room thinks Putin will stop at Ukraine, I assure you, he will not. But Ukraine can stop Putin if we stand with Ukraine and provide the weapons that needs to defend itself. That is all Ukraine is asking. They're not asking for American soldiers. In fact, there are no American soldiers at war in Ukraine, and I'm determined to keep it that way. But now, assistance to Ukraine is being blocked by those who want to walk away from our world leadership. It wasn't long ago when a Republican president named Ronald Reagan thundered, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." Now my predecessor, a former Republican president, tells Putin, quote, "Do whatever the hell you want." That's a quote. A former president actually said that, bowing down to a Russian leader. I think it's outrageous, it's dangerous, and it's unacceptable.
For more on President Biden's State of the Union on this International Women's Day, we'll be joined by three women. Israeli peace activist Neta Haman Mina, whose mother was a hostage in Gaza. There were many hostage families of Americans who were guests last night at the State of the Union. Palestinian Egyptian American University of Chicago professor Iman Abdelhadi, who gave an alternative State of the Union last night called State of the Genocide. But we begin with Katrina Vandenhoevel, publisher of The Nation magazine. Katrina, welcome to Democracy Now! Let's begin where, well, one of the first topics President Biden brought up was Ukraine. And, of course, he talked about Putin and Russia. Your response?
Well, Amy, let me put this in a broader framework, if I could. First of all, I think the domestic piece of the speech was important in marking the end of trickle-down economics, the rise of the end of neoliberal economics, the beginning of the end. But I don't think we can have a transformative foreign policy without with a transformative domestic policy without a change in our foreign policy. It captures the attention, the priorities, the funding. If we are going to police the world and be the indispensable nation, which is at the heart of what President Biden's Cold War redux speech was, there was a divide. It was sort of like Roosevelt and Truman and then off-base Reagan. I do think that the best case for Ukraine, and it has been touted but dismissed, is a negotiated settlement that will preserve the security of Ukraine, that will bring more peace and stability to Europe. Germany's deindustrializing as a result of the pressures of the war. And I think, you know, it would promote broader stability. There is, for Biden, an easy sort of point person in Putin, but, you know, Reagan, the lesson of Reagan was not tear down this wall as much as it was, let us end the Cold War, let us not be triumphalist in doing so, and let us find cooperation. Of course, Gorbachev was a different leader, but Russia embattled, Russia isolated, is a world designed to be one of insecurity and militarization. So I do think there needs to be some hard thinking. It may not happen until after the election. I do think Victoria Nuland's departure from the administration is a sign that the hard line on Ukraine may be diminishing. Kurt Campbell, who has come in, is much more interested in China. But again, I come back, Amy, it is hard to have a transformative domestic policy without a transformative foreign policy, which means ending the policing and the global policing that the United States seems, or the establishment seems to believe, is their right.
Talk more about Victoria Nuland's exit and what exactly that means, and how you feel Biden should be shifting the approach to Ukraine and Russia right now.
There is no military solution. It is going to be a political negotiated solution. Victoria Nuland believed more weapons, as do many others, including we're marking the 75th anniversary of NATO next month, which is not a coffee clutch. It is a military industrial complex institution. Again, I think there have been many possible negotiations in the last 2 years. We're learning about them through leaks, through German files. And those have been pushed aside or have failed because there was no real political will. I don't see a lot of political will until after the election, but I hope there are back channels underway, as there have been at other times in the Cold War, because this is a Cold War redux moment. And it's one that I think endangers rather than enhances the security of the United States. And by the way, Amy, I don't speak for people outside my office, maybe, but the war weariness I think we're feeling around the world is not to be denied. And I think it's an elite project, Ukraine, which doesn't mean there are many people who have been caught up in the nationalism, in the xenophobia that war often produces. These are people who need assistance, but the cost of reconstruction of Ukraine alone is estimated at $1 trillion. We are not great at staying after we've messed up, or Russia, the assets of Russia may be seized, of the oligarchs. But I do think a negotiated solution. Now, the name calling that happens when you raise that is ugly, and it constricts debate when we need a wider debate about the kind of world we want to live in. This is not isolationism. This is a different way of engaging the world, and not militarily, which has come to occupy so many think tanks and minds, as opposed to what is the alternative that we can craft.
And where do you see Putin right now? Do you see him shifting in any way? Apparently, the Bidens invited Yulia Navalnaya. You probably might have a better pronunciation of her last name, Alexei Navalny's widow. Also, they invited the First Lady of Ukraine, but neither came.
That's interesting. I mean, Biden did meet with Yulia Navalnaya and her daughter, I think a week or so ago, soon after the tragic death of Alexei Navalny. Putin, he faces an election March 17th, no cliffhanger. There is, by the way, kind of a semi-comparable uncommitted movement in certainly cities in Russia where they will, due to Navalny's strategic insight, show up at the polling booth, they being groups of people together at noon on election day, which I believe is a Sunday. And I think that's important. I do think we're seeing a wave of repression in Russia on the eve of the election. A good friend of mine, Boris